Tonight, I want to start laying the groundwork for what we're really all about and what we're really doing. And it's just a way of getting above things and taking a look at the lay of the land so that you can all figure out why you might even want to be participating in this. And I want to begin by sharing that we are a postulate-based system of wisdom. We are not a belief-based faith. And there is a tremendous difference between those two things. And I think in order to explain the lay of the land, how we see this whole process, I want to back up a little bit and share some ideas from our point of view so you can see whether or not you're in harmony with that, how that strikes you. So we see our role as a teacher, as a kahuna priest, as that of, first of all, teaching principles. And the first principle we really got to begin with is this notion of a postulate-based system of wisdom as opposed to a belief-based faith. What is the difference between those two things? Because most people, in my experience, the vast majority of people, don't have a clue. And we begin with defining what a postulate is, at least in the way we mean it. It can have a number of meanings, but in the way we mean it, we're saying a postulate is something that you can recognize to be true, that you can just recognize it to be real. There's no doubt about it. There's no belief that is required. And we often compare that to the idea of the principles that we learn, you know, in mathematics or geometry. We know that a postulate in geometry is that if for two points that are on the same plane, the shortest distance between them will represent a straight line. That's how we define a straight line. So that's a postulate. Intuitively, we can know that it's real. We can see that it's real. We don't have to debate it. There's no faith that's required. There's no belief in that principle that's required. And because it's a principle that's in harmony with reality, what happens is that principle can work when we apply it to our reality to unlock life energy for us. And of course, that principle has. I mean, that principle is involved in probably every single thing that we do in our lives every day. You know, the principles of geometry, the principles of algebra, the principles of mathematics and all of their forms, that to the extent we understand these things and know them and can apply them to our world, we unlock life energy out of our world. And because we've got very good at doing that, that's why we have things today like jet airplanes, and all of that stuff is the result of understanding the laws and principles that make up the world that we call reality with the capital R. And we begin with the idea, obviously, about God, and I'm not going to dwell on this too deeply tonight, but the idea is that the number one postulate, we have to make a number one definition. We have to have the whole thing hang on something. There is a foundational postulate in all things. The foundational postulate in mathematics is that there is a difference between 0 and 1. And all of the rest of mathematics is built upon that postulate. Well, in Hualahuna, the basic postulate is that we define God to be the all that is. That's the only thing it can possibly mean. God is the all that is. Otherwise, the idea of a God doesn't make any sense. And then our whole system of wisdom is built on that. So as a teacher, my first job is to point out our approach. And our approach is, it's a postulate-based system of wisdom. It is not a belief-based faith. I have to believe that there is a God out there who put a special people on the face of the earth, and only those who were fortunate enough to be born in that particular society is going to be able to make it to heaven, and everybody else is condemned to hell. You know, all of that stuff, it may provide motivation, it may provide the basis for a social structure, and it may work at some levels. But it does not work at the big level, which is the law of love. And so we talk about the law of love. and how that law is the master law. Because if God is all that is, then what we can know for sure is that God contains all that is in the world of form as well as all that is in the world of spirit. And the world of form is made out of space and time and matter and energy. So God is made out of all of that. Everything that is space or time or matter or energy is made out of God. So therefore, God contains time. Time does not contain God. So the whole notion to us of a God that would condemn anyone to go anywhere for eternity reflects a profound misunderstanding of what an all that is. Now, we don't need to make anybody wrong, but what I'm pointing out is that there is a difference between looking at the world through the eyes of a postulate-based system of wisdom versus what you can see when you look at the world through a belief-based faith perspective you have to have faith in. In our perspective, there is no misuse of faith. We say that belief is necessary only for that which is not real, because that which is real can be recognized, and it works reliably and flawlessly. Now, that's a principle of wisdom. Many of these principles, by the way, part of the practice you can do is bring them to your altar every day and just ponder that principle. Belief is necessary only for that which is not real. Bam. Man, that is so pregnant with so much meaning. I know for me, I've meditated on that principle, I'll bet you 1,000 times, and every single time I do, it opens up for me a whole new dimension of understanding that I was out of touch with before. So these things are there for a reason, and they work powerfully because they're rooted in reality. Can you imagine if people thought that the only way you could fly would be to do it as a bird? So we try to build airliners with wings that flap, as opposed to understanding the laws of aerodynamics and jet propulsion, and build engines where, you know, airplanes routinely carry people around the world hundreds at a time. That's pretty amazing. But that's the difference between a postulate-based system of wisdom as opposed to a belief-based faith. Now, in this role, why would somebody want a teacher? I want to be able to call you to your attention to my latest blog. If you haven't had a chance to get there yet, go to the website, www.hunawisdom.com, and pull down on the menu that is brings you to Pearls of Wisdom, and that's what I call my blog. And the latest blog is about the nature of a spiritual teacher. So what's the role of a teacher in all of this? And one of the points that I make in my blog is that, you know, nobody really needs a teacher, because all of us are made out of God. And all of us are complete within ourselves. All of us are whole. The only problem is when we're here in this life, we become quite unconscious. And we don't know how whole we are. Now, when we leave this life, having done it twice in this life, and you all know about my death experiences, having done it, I can assure you that we all wake up home. We all wake up home, and we're awake, and we get it. We know who we are. We remember who we are. We realize we couldn't screw it up even if we try. But the difference between how asleep we are and how awake we are there is what we call unconsciousness. And to the extent I am not walking in that world at that level, I am unconscious. And what happens when I'm unconscious is in that area I'm not aware. And I may make choices that are not based in love, which is centered at its core in reality, because reality is all that is. Reality is God. God is reality. God is all that is. And God exists throughout all time in a place of perfect harmony, or there we wouldn't be here. And that nature of that perfect harmony is that energy we call love. So to the extent we can be in harmony with that energy, which means stand in harmony with reality, we find out that life works. And we have a lot of joy. And we find out that to the extent that we can't be in harmony with that reality, we block the flow of life energy because we're standing outside the circle of life to some extent, somewhere, someplace. And in that place, we get pain. And we make choices that are not rooted in the highest level of wisdom that we wish we could probably demonstrate. And so what happens is we get in pain. And we realize that unconsciousness is very much like being trapped in a box. And the instructions on how to get out of that box are written on the outside of the box. And the box is becoming progressively more painful, progressively more uncomfortable. And you realize if someone would just read you the directions on the outside of the box, you could get out of there a lot faster. And that's when a teacher becomes important. Now, you don't need a teacher, because I promise you, you will sooner or later figure it out if that's what you want to do on your own. There'll come a point where you are going to wake up home. And you're going to laugh, and it's going to be what a hoot. The only difference is that when you have a teacher, you have the tendency to save yourself a lot of suffering. So that's why you might want a teacher. Now, what's this teacher going to do? Well, first of all, as we said, the job is to teach you some principles so that you can start standing in a different place. Why is that important? Well, because what we see depends upon where we're standing. That's the whole importance of perspective. We want to be able to see how things come together, how they fit better. That's this journey of awakening. To do that, we have to elevate our perspective. There's just no way around it. So the teacher needs to be able to share with you how you can do that. Well, let me take that back. There's lots of teachers out there. The kind of teacher that I'm talking about, which is a real priest, what that kind of teacher does, in the Hawaiian way of looking at that word priest, by the way, what that kind of a teacher does is they are committed to helping you awaken to your personal divinity. You are made entirely out of God. Every part of your life is made out of God because there's nothing else out of which it can be made. So your job, ultimately, in this game we call life, is to wake up and embrace your divinity, and that's what we do here. That's what we teach. That's what a real priest, in our definition, does. So what we want is to be able to share with you places that you're not noticing your divinity and help you awaken so you can embrace it. And we have this system of wisdom that is extremely powerful at helping us do that. And so it becomes a tool whereby we can progressively unlock that door from the inside with that combination. That's the problem with that room. It's locked from the inside. Only you can open up the combination, but you got to get somebody from outside of the room to reach the combination, or it's going to take you a long time to figure it out. So that's how we see the role of a teacher. And part of that, I said, is to teach these principles. Another part, and this is something that I want you to really ponder, is we require commitments. Now, these commitments aren't willy-nilly, and they're not just like setting up a bar for somebody to jump over to prove that they're great people or any of that. It's not like that. Instead of us saying we require commitment, what I ought to say is we point up what your commitments are as a nature of your existence and what you say you want to accomplish, and then we make those things formal so you have the opportunity to see how you're living up to your commitments. Now, we take it even further. Because what we really understand is that commitment and how you're keeping your commitments is a mirror of how you're standing in harmony with reality. It's a mirror in how you can see you're doing this concept called love. Love is the goal. Love is a doing thing. We want to do love. We want to be in harmony with reality. So first of all, we have to see what harmony is. And to do that, we have to see what reality is. So that's why these perspectives are so important, so we can see that reality with the big R that is the all that is God. You know, that fundamental reality that we see in geometry is a spiritual thing, but it applies very directly to the world of form. But you know, that thing also applies to the world of spirit. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And when we wind up in this place where we have commitments that we get to see in a mirror how we're keeping them, that's really the shortest distance between two points. I can't, in reality, as your teacher, teach you anything that you don't already know. My job is help you to notice that which you've forgotten. And because I truly see life in those terms, what I do is create dynamics where I can hold up a mirror and I don't have to be anybody's judge. People will look in that mirror and they for themselves will see how they're keeping their commitments. Then my job is to help them not judge themselves. And how to just take a look that they may have some things that they need to learn about how they're living their life. And there's a real key there. See, because life is a mirror. All of life is a mirror. We make decisions, we get back results. Choices bring consequences. And the kinds of choices we make bring back consequences, and all of those consequences make up the world in which we get to live. So after a while, when we've had enough pain, we start taking a look at other ways we can make choices. And then we discover that there's this incredible thing about life, and that is you can be more awake. You can actually be more awake when you're awake. Like one of the most amazing things for me is to notice how years ago, I would get these insights, and I mean, the world I was living in after the insight was so much brighter than the world I had been in before the insight that I couldn't imagine how the world could get any brighter. And the next day I'd wake up and have another insight, and it would get that much brighter again. I've had the same experience with my wife. I wake up sometimes and I don't know how I could love her anymore. And the next day I wake up and I love her even more. And it's this incredible experience of awakening. And when I do, I win. And life gets really powerful and magical. And our job as a teacher is to help you do that, to help you wake up. Well, we can't do that if you won't have some ability to look at us as perhaps being more awake. It's not an ego thing. It's a teacher thing. Now, people who are interested in transcending their pain and lifting their perspective don't get wrapped up in those kind of questions. They're my students. They understand that I'm hired to provide a service. Like any person who provides a service, there are things that I must know or must have mastery of that they don't. When I hire an electrician, when I ask my brother John out there to be able to help me with something, it's because he understands it better than I. He has mastery in that area. I assume he does, or I wouldn't bother to call him. And that's what I'm doing. I'm hiring a person who's mastered something to help me accomplish my goal. But people who are in an ego battle and need to see themselves, and the key here is need to see themselves as spiritually involved, that's the first place they go. For them, the path of spirituality is about being worthy. If they see themselves as spiritual people, somehow that makes them worthy. Well, the truth is that that can't make you worthy. Because you already are worthy. You're a part of God. You were born worthy. You'll die worthy. You may do some things in between that you'll look back at your life and say, my word, why did I ever do that? But the bottom line is you're worthy. You're a part of God. There is nothing you could do to screw that up. So if you're looking to be able to walk around with a halo on your head, to be able to say to people, you're worthy, you've already missed the mark. It's not about that. What it's about is learning how to be in a place of more awakeness tomorrow than you are today. That's what my job is to help you get there. And when you make commitments, you get to see how you're performing in that department. I get to hold up the mirror, and you get to see how you're performing. We just, you know, typically, we've always had an annual priesthood review. And ours got started, and the people were able to see in those mirrors places where they weren't keeping their commitments. And that's great. I'm not judging them. I don't judge any of them. And my job is to help them not to judge themselves. But if they're able to come to terms with how they're keeping their priesthood commitments, then they're going to find that the next stage is going to be even more magical. But if they're finding out that they look in that mirror and they see that they're not really paying attention to them and not keeping them much, what's going to happen is it's going to become a heavy thing and a source of a lot of pain. You know, why anybody would go from the status of a member to a person who's on the priesthood path is because we want a mirror. And just like life is a mirror, priesthood is really a mirror. And I've said this to people time and time and time again, and people nod their head and they say, oh, yeah, and they don't get it. But I think the people who have taken the path now, they get it. Priesthood is a mirror, big time mirror. It's about how you keep your commitments. It's about how you define your commitments. It says everything about how you are interacting with your environment, and it will bring up everything that is out of balance. And what's nice for me as a teacher is I don't have to do anything. I just share what the commitments are and why they might be necessary. As an example, if you're a priest, one of the commitments that you've got to do is you've got to have respect. You have to have respect not only for your teacher, but you also have to have respect for your students. I know a lot of priests out there that don't have respect for their students. One of the biggest problems I've had with some of the male priests that I've taken on, and I should say with some of the female priests too, is that they've had a tendency to leak sexual energy out to the people that they're trying to teach. And you can't do that. You don't love your student or your other teacher if that's getting involved. It's noisy. It creates a lot of static on the channel. This is about really being able to see things that sometimes are exceedingly subtle from where you're at, but profound in their effect once you get them. And so the object of a teacher is to be in a place where you don't bring up any of that kind of stuff in your students. Now see, that's what I mean by these commitments. That's a commitment that derives from the nature of the relationship. So what we do is we take a look at the nature of things, and we commitments might really be necessary if you're going to be in harmony with that thing in your life, whatever that is. It's a part of God. Where is love there? So we get into a place where we want to know that. Now, that's what we mean when we say it's a system of wisdom instead of a belief-based faith. If we read sometimes the religious writings of various religions out there, they don't quite look that way. I'm not making them wrong or bad. They're perfect for their purpose, and they're a part of God. But they're founded on some kind of a belief, and you got to have faith, and if you don't have faith, you got to just accept the places that don't make sense as being some kind of mystery. And if you even allow yourself to think outside of that way of thinking, you have committed a sin and you're going to go to hell for all eternity. And they don't really deal with these issues in a loving way because they're not founded in reality. And they can't afford anybody to access any place inside of them where common sense is. See, what they're trying to do, and this is another part of this system of wisdom and part of my role as a teacher here, what they're trying to do is they're trying to keep people from looking at a place inside where each of us can know what is real. Otherwise, there's no reason to forbid somebody to even think of something in some other way. And a lot of religions in our world do that, predominantly the big major ones of Christianity and the Muslim faith. If you look at things outside of their way of looking at things, some of the denominations get very upset. Well, why be upset? What a kahuna does is we want to be able to say, look at what's real. We can know we're all a part of God. We're all connected to reality. And there's this place where when we can see what's real, we can see that it works. And there's never anything to lose by embracing that. I can assure you that there is nothing to lose by embracing your divinity. Some religions would call that idea blasphemous. That's because they don't want you touching the source of your power. In our postulate-based system of wisdom, what we're saying is it's the only thing that can possibly be real. If God is all that is, then you are made out of God, and every part of your life is made out of God. That makes you divine. That's what the word divine means. And that, therefore, becomes the source of your power. It's already within you. And all of this light is already within you. The difference is your perspective. When you come to believe things that are not real, you wind up getting inside of that box with the lock on the inside of the box. And we do that. As gods, we come here. We do this. And why we do this is because without the idea of pain, the idea of joy makes no sense. And we come here and we experience unconsciousness so we can really understand the value of light. It's the nature of divinity. That's what Huna means when it says that God displays in contrasting and complementary dualities. In real life, that's what it means. We contain it all. We contain the dark and we contain the light. The object of the dark is to help us understand how valuable the light is. That's how we unlock meaning. That's what Huna says when it teaches us that the gods thirst for meaning and expression. Meaning. It's the only thing a god needs is a mirror, life. Life is the place where we find meaning, and we get meaning in these contrasts. And expression happens when we combine complementary dualities. When we combine a man and a woman, we wind up with new life that's bigger than both of them. When we combine a husband and a wife in a marriage, we wind up with a source of aliveness that is way bigger than either of them could ever enjoy on their own. That's what we're trying to do, is learn how to stand in a place of love. Try to learn how to do the loving thing in every now. But we get into habits. We get into patterns. We are culturally conditioned. We are conditioned by our parents. We develop habituations. We develop addictions. And all of these things take us away from our power. And then when that happens, we get in pain. And it's exactly the way we planned it. Exactly the way we planned it. We wanted it that way. The world does not need healing. However, there are people in the world who are ready to heal. What they're ready to do is wake up. That is how you heal. You heal when you wake up. And life energy starts to flow where the light is. Life and light, there's that marriage. And when we have the marriage of life and light, what we have is love. So if Hawalahuna being a postulate-based system of wisdom, all of this stuff ties together, and there's this incredible framework there. And once you understand how all these pieces fit together in this framework, you go into this place and the amount of doors that open onto the number of vistas that you can see from there is absolutely, utterly, completely astounding. And when you open every one of them, it's a whole nother world of magic, and you say to yourself, I can't believe this. I can't believe how I could get any more awake. And then you walk through that room and open another door and you're even more awake. So that's what a teacher is for. Now, there'll come a day, I promise you, whether you have any teacher, no matter the teachers you have, You know, some of us get real reluctant to have a teacher, and the reason we do is because some of the people who have set themselves up to be spiritual teachers in their lives really led us into quite a trap. Didn't respect us, abused us in some way. They were coyote priests. That's what the Apaches call the coyote priests. That's what they do. They're to teach us what a real priest is. They're the tricksters. What they do, ultimately, is that they teach you that your trust doesn't belong in the priest. If you're focused on putting your trust in the priest, you miss the point. Your trust needs to be focused on you. You're the place. When you trust you, and you trust this process, then you get to see what's real. And the most important thing about all of that is that if you're out there following a priest, what you're really doing is you're substituting his credentials for yours, or her credentials for yours. She's saying this is the way, he's saying this is the way the world works, this is what we can do, this is how it looks, this is all of this and that and the other thing, and you're following along after that person, but you know, you're really not getting the awakening that's there for you. What you really want is you want it to be your credential. You want a teacher that will help you to step into that teacher's shoes and look at the world from that perspective. And you get to see what you see from that perspective. To do it, you have to be open. As a teacher, I can't make you do that. I cannot make people look at things they don't want to look at. And everybody on this path always says, oh, no, not me. I promise I'll always look at everything. But I can promise you there are times and there are circumstances we're going to come to a brick wall. And you're going to come face to face with some of your sacred cows. And you're going to realize that to make it up the path, you have to shoot the cow. And you're going to get really upset that you have to do that. It happens with everybody, so please don't engage in the illusion that it's not going to happen. And I, as a teacher, know that. So that's another requirement of a teacher, is you have to have somebody who has the ability to say, it's okay, I won't take it personally. And here's your mirror. Even when it might be poking a stick in a hornet's nest. That's the most valuable part of my service. It's those places where the most growth occur. So if I'm going to get upset with you because you don't like me in that moment, or if I'm going to withhold a mirror because it's appropriate for you to hear in that moment and you really don't want to look at life from that point of view, it's my job to be able to do that. If I can't do that for you, I am not being the kind of teacher that I am committed to be, because I'm committed to do love. And I am far too busy loving you to care whether or not you like me. That's in Huna why we say you cannot love that which you care about, and you cannot be connected to that to which you're attached. If my caring about how you look at me makes me so attached that I feel I need you and I can't afford to give you a mirror because you may not want to be with me, you might go away somewhere, I can't do my job. It's impossible. So one of the points that I make, I hope, is that's a real critical thing of a teacher. So we want to be able to teach principles. We want to require commitments. We want to derive the commitments. You know, where do these things come from? And then we want to offer a place where they're front and center. That's what an ordination is. We're making a formal statement. We are going to keep these commitments. And then we hold up a mirror periodically so you can see how you're doing. Because any place where you're not keeping those commitments, what you can know for sure is that there's something you have to learn about doing love, being more in harmony with reality. Some limiting belief is operating inside of you that is taking your power, and it won't work for you to continue to feed it your power. And that's when the priesthood path gets very magical. Your own personal priesthood path, by the way, I'm not talking about professional Kahuna Kapua, although that is the same thing, but for those who take the Kahuna Pili path, the personal priesthood path, that's what you're doing. It's a formal embracing of this notion. And then my job is just to hold up the mirror. I don't have to argue about whether or not the commitment was appropriate or not appropriate, but you've already agreed to all. You all already understood that. And I don't even have to be your mirror. I don't have to tell you that you did this in the correct way or not the correct way or any of that. Here's the commitments you made. How do you feel you did with that? What I notice is this, and I notice this, and I notice this. How does that square with these commitments? A lot of times people can get real creative about their memories. And that's what a mirror does. Is I stand outside and I say, well, what I noticed is this, what I noticed is this, what I noticed is this, and what I noticed is this. I'll tell you, when you're in a place of having a malu, that is so damn irritating you can't even hardly stand it. You just as soon choke me as look at me in that moment. I know, because I've been on the other side of it my entire career. It's the nature of the game. And that's why we have a sense of humor. We don't take it personally, and we let people then redefine their commitments and take a breather and take a look at things. And when they're ready to reengage, they do. And we're back to love and admiration and respect and all the other things that are mutually required for us to be able to have a productive relationship. So what I want to get across tonight is that as we proceed along these studies, we're going to have a discussion about the various aspects of these principles, how we see God, how we see life, how we see priesthood, you know, the teaching of principles, requiring of commitment, providing a mirror, how we see the role of family. And then we're going to get into the way of wisdom in a formal way. And we're going to start taking a look at the altar, the East, Lono, understanding our minds, the West, Ku, understanding our hearts, the North, Kane, Father, the source of all of our inspiration, the South, Wahine, Mother, the source of all manifestation. How do these things work? The nature of integrity, the nature of manifestation, the nature of self-discipline, the nature of love. What are these things about? We have love as a goal. We have commitment, which is a mirror in which we get to see how we're doing love. Then we have self-discipline. Self-discipline is the key to keeping our commitments. And then we have manifestation. Commitment is the key to manifestation. So in Hoʻolāhuna, it's not about just saying, gee, it's important to live a loving life. Now we take a look at what a loving life is, why it's important, and what are all the components of that. And then how do we go ahead and do those components? What is integrity? It's a great thing for me to say, gee, I require integrity. Well, if you don't know how to do that any better than you knew before you met me, what good am I doing for you? I'm holding you up to a standard, but I'm not teaching you how to meet that standard. So now we define what integrity is, and we take a look at what it takes to be in integrity. And then we'll take a look at each one of those things. How do you do that? How do you do that? How do you do that? And we give you tools. And then all of a sudden, you start to realize you do have the power to do these things, and they don't have to be painful anymore. And they work. They're powerful. They really work. So that's the overview. That's the idea of postulates and a postulate-based system of wisdom. And I'm going to add another word to it now, but this concept of entheogenic. It's a practice where I get to find my divinity within, entheogenic, the inner divinity. I get to recognize that I am divine. That's an entheogenic system of wisdom. And because it's rooted in reality, it's a reality-based entheogenic system of wisdom. So that's what Hoʻolāhuna is. And that's what I wanted to set the stage tonight so you can have the proper idea about how all of this works and what you have to look forward to in the days ahead as you engage these conferences and this material. And they'll be posted up there as sound files that you'll be able to download so you can practice with them, and they'll be up there as outlines, and they'll be up there as book format. The first book of Introduction to Hoʻolāhuna will cover much of what we talked about tonight. The second book, The Way of Wisdom, Perspectives and Practice, How the Ancient Reality-Based System of Hoʻolāhuna Can Help You Heal Your Life. And we'll start looking at the altar, and we'll start looking at the practice of Hoʻolāhuna and all of these various things and how they tie into all these postulates and why they have to be. and we'll start to discover the origins of why there are social disorders, and we'll get to see really what it's going to take to deal with the situation in the Middle East. We get to understand what it takes to raise our kids in a place where they become self-empowered and have a profound sense of their own self-worth. That's the payoff for this. You get to be able to create a relationship with a life partner where you look in each other's eyes and you're absolutely transported to a place of magic. That's how it is with me and Lonnie every day. Get busy, we do our things, we get eating dinner, we're talking to each other, and it, you know, the normal thing, and then all of a sudden something will happen, there'll be a moment, and we always take time every day to embrace one another, look in each other's eyes, and tell each other how much we love each other. And or there'll be a place where Lonnie will look at me with the most incredible respect and just glowing with appreciation for something that I've done. And there's just no amount of money in the world that can replace that. You know, that's rich. That's a rich life. To have your children look up to you in the highest and best way you could ever possibly want. That's rich. That's what it's about. To be able to be known for a person who is a true friend, but the loyalty was always to principles, never to the person. And then that way, when somebody's behaving less than divine, you have the ability to see their divinity as separate from that other part of them and bring alive their divinity, because Makia, that which you pay attention to, is what comes alive. So hopefully that helps, and I hope you got something out of tonight. Does anybody out there have any questions?
Hello, no?
Yes.
This is Meg.
Yes, Meg.
I don't have a question, but I have a comment.
Sure.
And it's just that, you know, what you were saying was so pure and clean. It's just crystal clear. I have no questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. It really is clean. And that's why I think it attracts people like yourselves, and because some of us are ready for that place where we can be in harmony with what is. And we just finally spend enough time doing this kind of work that we want something that's really real. And for me, Ho'olohuna is just, it's the only thing that's ever come close. And I love it. Absolutely love it. And so when you give me a mirror like that, I want you to know you make my day, because that's what I live to do, and I appreciate it. So thank you, Meg.
You're welcome.
Okay, anybody else have any questions?
Hey, Lono, it's me, Jose. I have a question.
Okay.
The whole life what I have, nothing is impossible for me. I don't say. It's hard for me to explain English because is my second language.
Right. Well, I think that you're doing a wonderful job, Jose. Your English is much better than my Spanish.
Well, anyway, I never say I believe or I not believe. So for me, it's a possible or impossible or not possible. That's my...
Yeah, well, that's a great way of looking at it. It's about reality. I mean, there are principles that are involved. Yeah. And it's, we can make choices to do anything, but that doesn't mean that the outcome is going to be what we expected.
Yeah. And,
because the universe is made out of love.
Uh-huh.
And let's assume that a person is, for instance, a person who the number one thing in their life is they think that when they have enough money, they'll be worthy. What you can know for sure as they go through life is it's going to become progressively more and more empty for them.
Huh.
Because that's just how life is built, right?
Yeah.
Your little girl, Nikki, her job is to sit down and do the homework if she's going to master the subject.
Uh-huh.
She is not going to be able to master the subject if she's not willing to do the homework. So those things are built in. That's how the game looks. And then within that game, within that framework, we can make all kinds of choices and have all kinds of experiences and manifest all kinds of things. The object is, how loving are the things that we manifest for ourselves, really?
Yeah. The other question what I have is... I talked with David the other night, and this other night, and for this is my second time in a long time. That's when I cry, and I feel like nobody loved me, except to my mom, my brothers, and Debbie, and my daughter. And I see these persons don't love me because I don't open my spirit or my heart. And right now, I'm confused because right now when you're talking, I'm thinking about the mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
For the mirror, what I have in my life is my mom. I am this person because my mom, she is my teacher. My father, he teach me about work and what's called
fears
in this life.
Nothing is impossible.
And the other way is nothing is impossible in this life. And I appreciate it more the mirror what I have from my mom. For me, is the real life.
Life is your mirror.
Uh-huh.
Life is a much bigger, much, much bigger thing than your mother. Your mother is a part of life. Your brothers are a part of life. Debbie is a part of life. Nikki is a part of life. When you're out there doing your business, your business is a part of life. And every one of those things is your mirror. And your number one job is to understand what love is before you go judging whether or not somebody else is loving you.
Mm-hmm.
See, what you're doing is you're sticking your nose into their business. You're telling them what they feel, how they feel. When you say you don't love me, what you're saying is that you know better how they feel than they know.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody likes that. That's a violation of our sacred space. You can say, it doesn't feel like you're loving me.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're in a place where they have the opportunity when you do that to say, well, we think we are.
Mm-hmm.
Because we notice that this is what you say and this is what you do. And if they point out to you that those two places are different, that's because they love you. And they know that when you're doing and you're talking are in the same place as you're knowing, that all of your lives are going to work together better. And so a lot of times I find myself having to be a mirror to somebody of something that they don't like, and that's their first thing. You don't love me. Well, excuse me, but what's real is I'm loving you right now more than anybody ever has, because I'm willing to stand up and hold up this mirror that you don't want to see because I love you, and if somebody doesn't do it, you're not going to wake up. And so what I do is I thank people.
The part where I'm confused is when I call my mom or when she called me, say, you need to go to the church. And I have Debbie, and she want me to, with her on the HUNA meetings. What is real and what is not real?
Well, brother, if I were in your shoes, I would understand that the reason that your mother is saying whatever she does say to you, I'm sure is motivated absolutely out of love. And I'm absolutely sure that what Debbie says to you is absolutely motivated out of love.
Mm-hmm.
So your job is to take responsibility for waking up and deciding which of those paths work for you.
Mm-hmm.
Does your path work for you best if you decide that you want to do the Catholic path and go to church every Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Or does your path work for you if you do nothing and just let the, you know, the outdoors be your church, so to speak, like you're fond of saying? Or does it work for you to get on a spiritual path with Debbie and walk together on that path so you two can grow closer together? It's just a simple matter of choices and consequences. I can tell you that the only way you're going to ever be able to be close with Debbie is if you're willing to walk a spiritual path with her, because that's what makes people close. I've never seen two people be able to be close if they're not on the same spiritual path together. So, you know, if you want to be that close to your mom, then maybe you want to go back and be a Catholic. If you don't want to be close to anybody, then just keep doing what you're doing as far as the outdoors is concerned. Or if you want to be that close with Debbie, then you maybe want to consider why she wants you to walk that spiritual path with her.
Oh, okay.
What the benefit of that would be. So those are all choices. They all have a consequence. And whatever you choose is perfect for you. It's not my, you know, I can't make that choice for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Aloha, brother.
Well, thank you, man.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Lono, I have a question. This is Meg.
Yes, Meg.
I'm here with Jose, and he loves his mom very much, and he loves Debbie very much. And it seems to me that he is afraid of losing one or the other based on which path he's going to choose. And I'm wondering, is there a place where he can be, where he can continue to be loved by both of these women that are very important to him, and yet follow his own truth at the same time?
Actually, that's the only way to do it, is for him to begin by following his own truth. There are choices and there are consequences. But let's just take a dynamic where a mother says, son, you either do it this way or I don't want to talk to you anymore. Well, if that's the case, that's her choice. My own parents did the same thing to me. When I left the Benedictine monastery, and I left the Catholic Church, my parents disowned me. They were so ashamed of me and so upset that they said I was no longer their son. They never wanted to talk to me again. That was their choice, and I had to honor that, but I had to do my truth. I didn't make that choice. They made that choice. That's their business. My business is to do my truth. And I, therefore, want to be very aware of what my truth is. I understand what my mom and dad saw in the Catholic Church. I understood what it meant to them and our family. I understood what it meant to us growing up as a child. I understood all of that completely. But I was in a place where I could no longer do that because I had outgrown it. It was be like me trying to wear the same pair of shoes that I used to wear in sixth grade. I couldn't do it. So regardless of what my parents felt about it, I had to do my truth. My wife of today knew when she met me that I had a profound commitment to spirit. And she took a look and she said, you know, I want to walk that path with you. This path speaks to me too. That's how I knew she was the appropriate one for me to wed. I had previously been married to a woman who wanted no part of it. And it turned out to be hell on earth and a dynamic that was extremely dysfunctional. I eventually wound up having the blessings of my life, which are my two children, my son and my daughter. And I'm grateful for the relationship from that point of view. And today we're friends again. But the bottom line is, back in those days, you know, 30 years ago, that was a tough, tough thing. We weren't in harmony spiritually. I couldn't make it work. I couldn't ignore it. So the second time I chose more wisely. I let my wife know, or at least my potential wife in those days, who I was and how I looked at life and, you know, what my values were. And I discussed them frankly and openly, and I didn't hide anything. I didn't try to make myself look better. As attracted as I was to her, as much as I loved her, as much as I had this thing that was at the core of my belly that was just pulling me to her, I had to be in that place. We have to own our truth. That's the only way to really do love. What other people do with that is up to them. That's where this path is particularly valuable, because when you understand that you're divine, when you can come to an altar and say, you know, heavenly parents, share insight with me. When you have a way to look beyond where you're at, you get answers to these kinds of questions. Maybe that's what all this is about, is so that you can really take some time to honestly do this path and see if it doesn't give you the answers to those questions. Maybe that's why this is coming up for you in your life. And then you'll be in a place of being able to see the value of it. But until you do it, you're not going to see the value of it. I mean, that's my point. Any other questions out there?
Hey, Lono. This is Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Before you said, my number one job is to understand what love is. That is a mouthful. Could you share a little bit on that?
Yeah, we're going to have a whole class on that. as we go along here. That's the law of aloha, the law of love. And it descends from that idea that God is all that is and God exists in perfect harmony with God's self. Your life is perfect. Who you are is perfect. It's just your unconsciousness, which is perfect in and of itself, but it creates an experience that gets painful. But it's in that pot, if you will, that meaning is distilled. And so when we learn how to do love, we learn how to heal. We learn how to put everything back in order. And we have to own our truth. That's a big part of doing love. And we'll be talking a whole thing on that. That's a bigger question than I can answer in a couple of minutes tonight. Thank you. Well, I want you to know I love you. The copy of this and the other ones are going to be posted on the website here very shortly. And we'll be sending out our emails this week to the world. And we ask that if you get our announcement for the website, would you kindly forward it on to the people in your address book that might be interested, because that we want to grow. And the more we can get this light out there, the more it works for all of us. I love you all. Aloha.
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 Aloha.